track money penny. From the creators of Relevant Magazine, this is the Relevant Podcast.
Gotta be real with it. Kiki, do you love me? Are you riding? Say you never ever leave from beside me. Cause I want you and I need you. And I'm down for you always. KB, do you love me? Are you riding? Say you never ever leave from beside me. Cause I want you and I need you. And I'm down for you always.
It's Friday, July 20th, 2018, and it's the Relevant Podcast. I'm your host, Cameron Strang, and here with me in our Orlando studio, Eddie Big Hat Koffoltz.
Yes, nice to see you.
Over there on the ones and twos, our illustrious producer, my brother, Chandler Strang.
Hello.
And sitting by his side, his apprentice, Mark Jackson.
Hi there.
On the Skype line from Loverland, Virginia, Jesse Carey.
Hello, hello.
And all the way from Nashville, Tennessee, author, speaker, podcaster, extraordinaire, Annie F. Downs.
Good morning, gents. I feel like there was a comma between podcaster and extraordinaire, and I think I like that best.
Yeah, yeah. Extraordinaire is actually just an overarching
just
label. It's an umbrella.
Whatever you do, you wear a shirt with doves on it, extraordinaire.
It's my
you
bird shirt.
X on a blanket on a chair, bird shirt. Pictures of your friends on the wall back there.
Extraordinaire.
Extraordinaire. Yeah.
Extraordinaire, all the things. Thank you, guys.
That's who Annie F. Downs is.
You are so good for my ego, my emotions, all of it.
We have a great show coming up for you today. Comedian Bo Burnham joins us. He has a new movie coming out today, I believe, called Eighth Grade. We saw it at, one of our guys saw it at South by Southwest Film Festival this spring. It's a breakout. It was buzzworthy. And we're excited to have him on the show today.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
I have this in the bio. It has a 99% on Rotten Tomatoes right now.
Yeah. I saw the preview when I went and saw the Mr. Rogers movie last week, and it looks so good. I can't wait to see it.
What'd you think of Mr. Rogers?
Yeah. Jerk.
I thought it was really beautiful. I thought it was a great movie. I loved, my favorite part was watching him actually talk to children. And seeing how kids, that's what made me the most teary, because I thought, man, 5-year-old Annie, if she'd have met Mr. Rogers, she'd have hugged him too.
Yeah.
You know?
That guy like raised me. My dad traveled.
Yeah, I feel a little bit.
But really,
like
my
that.
Dad traveled all the time and I rarely saw him. Like Mr. Rogers was like, it was like kind of father figure.
The stable father figure.
Did you see the movie yet, Eddie?
I have not seen the movie.
Man, I gotta take that. It's gonna get me in some real hot water,
and I'm
a little worried. I'm a little worried about it.
Waiting on this.
When I was a kid, I thought Mr. Rogers was the most boring show ever.
Oh, for sure you
like,
did.
When it was on, I'm like, are serious people watch this for the fun of it? Like, this is...
There was two camps. There's the Sesame Street kids and the Mr. Rogers kids.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then there's the He-Man Ninja Turtle cool
All
kids.
All right, you're too old at that point.
Not me. I was watching shows with gratuitous violence at like 3. So, take that, Mr. Rogers.
Explains a lot.
I don't want to watch a show that involves the first 2 minutes the guys changing cardigans, okay? I've got shows where people are fighting.
One of the things they talk about in the film is how intentional Mr. Rogers was to have slow and quiet in his show. Have you seen the movie, Chandler?
No, not yet. I absolutely will. I just haven't yet.
And then America's Funniest Home Videos came on and Jesse knew his real calling in the world. This is what it's about. But you know what, Chandler, did you
watch? So Mr. Rogers raised you. America's Funniest Home Videos raised Jesse.
Which is exactly how you get an us.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's how you get it. Chandler, did you watch Square One? I bet you did.
Oh, I watched Square One.
No, you didn't? Oh, you watched Square One?
No, no, no.
It was like a math show.
No, Square One.
When we come home from school, I was like in 6th, 7th grade.
That's
Square
right.
One was on right then.
Oh, yeah.
It was perfect.
MathNet?
MathNet, dude.
Yes.
I love that.
Yeah.
I wonder if it still holds up. I have not seen an episode of it since I was a kid.
And Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego came on
great.
Right after that?
With Rockapella doing acapella. They were great.
Do, 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 do,
I love that. I have waited my entire adult life for a platform like this to request some help, because there was a show I watched in that era
take it from
on
the top.
PBS that had that had talking shoe puppets. Do y'all remember this?
I don't remember.
No one
that might
remembers
be a local
it.
Atlanta
talking
station.
Shoe puppets?
Yeah, it's talking shoe, and there was a boot that talked. It was all talking shoes, and I just need, if any of our listeners know what I'm talking about.
Have you
I think
ever
it's a
Googled
Canadian
it?
Show.
Talking shoe puppets?
I've Googled it, and I can't find anything, but I am sure of it. I can see the talking boot in my head.
You know,
I'm sure of it.
I mean, are you sure it wasn't a vivid dream?
Yeah, like
recurring
little,
Little Annie
no,
in her room.
No, I'm not sure. That's why I'm grateful for this opportunity.
Was it your imaginary friends when you played in the closet and stuff?
Hey, y'all. Welcome to my show.
Hey. I'm the boot. I like country music.
Hey.
I'm the sneaker. I'm athletic.
What was the plot?
I love y'all. I hate y'all.
Hurting my feelings.
There was always a mystery to solve. So the shoes were always they were puppet shoes. It wasn't cartoon. They were puppet shoes, and there were always mystery to solve, and they went upstairs a lot. I remember weird parts.
It sounds really creepy. This sounds a lot like, I don't know, I mean, not to go dark, but this sounds like the creepypasta, the Candle Cove. Do you guys know that?
No. I didn't understand any sentence of any part of that sentence.
Creepypasta is like stories, like tall tales, right?
Yeah, it's like urban legend. It's like urban legends for the internet era. But there's this one, a viral one that was big a few years ago, called Candle Cove, where people would act like they saw this kid's show that only a few people saw that involved like weird puppets. things got really creepy and scary. But anyway, it basically is what you're describing, Annie. Like, only a few people remember. Like, you guys don't remember that? They went upstairs?
They went kind upstairs. Kind
of creepy. Like, that's basically the plot.
Oh my God,
of
I just found creepy it on
pasta.
Google.
Yeah,
I just found it on Google. I just found it. It's called Read Along. Oh my gosh! You guys, sorry, I should have Googled.
I love
that
the mystery has been solved by the most obvious and straightforward Google search.
look at the boot that talks. Look at the boot that talks.
Annie, you started this by saying, "I'm so glad I have the platform.
Finally, I can be on the podcast.
To finally, in this mystery." Were you mean by platform the actual platform of Google, like the search engine?
I swear to y'all, I've Googled this before and couldn't find it, and I have no idea why it worked. I'm more embarrassed than any other emotion right now, but I'm also thrilled that now, when we are finished, I will spend the entire weekend of July 20th through 22nd when I'm flying around reading about Read Along and catching up with my own
somebody, childhood. Mental Floss, in the same search, there was an article, 8 forgotten kids shows sure to give you nightmares. And they posted this like 10 years ago, but they have clips, like YouTube clips of all these shows. Peppermint Park, your show is on there. The Adventures of Mark Twain, Fun with Grids, Nosy Bonk. That one looks terrifying.
Love Nosy Bonk.
Don't Put It in Your Mouth. There's a show called Don't Put It in Your Mouth.
Yep. Poison.
The new Zoo Review, The Miracle of Birth episode.
Hey, I'm poison.
Oh, I remember the new Zoo Review. Oh, wow. Anyway.
I also love like how much we restrict, like we're pretty careful with screen time with our kids.
Yeah.
Back in our, like when we were growing up, it was like, oh my gosh, this new babysitter is the best. Here, go watch whatever you want. Did your parents restrict screen time?
Oh, yeah, of course. I had 1 hour a day of TV time. I could earn more, but I mean, if I got in trouble, TV restriction was like the worst punishment. You can spank me all day long. I don't care.
I could do whatever I wanted.
Only an hour a day?
Maybe it was 2 hours during summer. But yeah, I mean, I could watch Webster and that's about it. And it was bedtime.
We weren't allowed. We didn't turn the TV on in our house Monday through Thursday.
What?
I
have unfettered access. How do you think I have all of this useless pop culture?
Right now, like I'll turn the TV on at 6 o'clock and go to bed at 2 and TV's been on the entire time. I mean, I'll watch 8 hours every night of TV. My parents knew that I would sit there and watch TV all the time. So they had to restrict it.
It's the best.
It's the best.
TV rules so hard.
Yeah. It is still Cameron's favorite babysitter.
Hey, before we move the show along, we have a little bit of housekeeping news.
Yes.
Eddie's moving.
I'm moving, you guys. Yes, I am. So here's the thing. Oh, all of a sudden, Annie, you sounded sad. I felt like this would be finally a joyous occasion. So here's the thing. I have to step away from being full-time cast member on the show, which you may have noticed lately. You're like, hey.
So what's different?
Yeah, that guy hasn't been here. Well, that's part of it.
Clearly.
There's a lot of traveling for IJM, and I love it because I really love IJM. But the traveling is picking up quite a bit. But the main reason is, and this is the part I'm very proud of, is that Brianne, my wife, who you guys know because we've talked about her on the show, she applied to and got accepted to a really great law school at the University of Florida. Go Gators. Annie, you can save it. This isn't about football. This is about Brianne's life.
Every piece of this news is the worst.
So we found out a week ago that she got accepted to law school, and they were like, hey, can you start in the fall? And that's 3 weeks from now. So we are right in the middle of renting out a house, buying a house up in Gainesville, moving our entire life. But that does mean that I will not be here in Orlando. So for some of you, finally, who I have blocked and who have been waiting to come back to the show, welcome back. The nightmare is over. But so that's what's happening. So,
but the plan is that you'll be on the show two episodes a month or more.
Yeah. I mean, I still have truly, I have the same setup that like Annie and Jesse have, a fancy mic and the ability to record. So it'll just be less frequent. But on the show and the new activist and all that kind of stuff, it'll just be not like, hey, every single week I'm Jesse Cameron saying he's not here again.
Right.
So
just don't call him an extraordinaire when you start introducing him on Skype.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
But you're still part of the fan.
Yeah.
People are still going to hear you.
It's a less is more situation.
I'm taking the Calvin route now, which is just you don't know when. No, just Calvin Curley.
Calvin, you're going to be on regularly. He was on sporadically.
He's still my favorite. You never know when the wind blows in. All of a sudden, there's Calvin saying something super weird on a microphone. Yeah. So I'll still be. So for a little while, I'll be a little bit quiet because we're going to be moving. But when mid-August hits and we're up in Gainesville, I'll be on as much as I can be. I feel like I want a good punchline for this, but I don't have a good punchline. But it will be a little bit different because I do like being on the show every week. Yeah. And I've had the chair at least available for, I mean, it's been like 5 years and 300 plus shows because I was like getting a little bit nostalgic. I was like, I've done 5 years.
June 21st.
Yeah, would have been, was. Wow.
You came on during my separation.
That's right.
You were my campus pastor.
Right.
And
oh my gosh, there's a lot
of
life.
Remember that?
There's a lot of life that has happened between that moment and right now.
Wow.
So sweet. Keep going. I remember,
it's jokes time.
We were in a transition on the show in a tough season. And I remember going to a kind of social justice event at the church on a like Friday night. It was like a concert thing or whatever. And in between the segments of this fundraising event, Eddie had to interview the girl who was putting on this fundraiser. And she was super nervous and super awkward. And Eddie just, you know, was great. He was like, he just kind of like his humor diffused the situation. He made her comfortable. He drew it out of her. And he was a great interviewer. And I had seen him obviously doing the announcements and stuff at church and all that.
And you were like, doing the announcements. Hold on. That guy can be dumb in public. Hold on. Well, then
we went to lunch. I mean, we didn't know each other really. We just met not long before. And then we went to lunch
sushi
not long after that. And you talked about you were wanting to write and you were interested in all these other things. And I was like, I need a stable, like local pastoral kind of presence on the podcast who's also funny and can hang. You want to come on our show? And he came on and just slid right in. And honestly, if I don't know if anybody was listening back then, but there was a couple of episodes where Eddie pastored me through my divorce and it was really helpful.
We had real talks. Like it was like, well, how we can't not talk about some of this on the show.
Well, I went on a sabbatical that fall at your prompting.
Yeah, that's right.
We got done recording a show and it was months into my separation and he goes, hey, we were done with the recording and he goes, hey, when are you going on a sabbatical? And I was like, no, I'm not. I'm good. I'm okay. Okay. I got all the plates spinning. He goes, no, I know you need to go away.
Yeah.
And this was like on a Wednesday and on Friday I started my sabbatical.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That was you.
But it's been a crazy 5 years. We've walked through, I mean, I don't want to get too like in memoriam here, but it's been like, there's been a lot of life that has happened in those last 5 years. Our jobs have changed. You know, I'm not at that church, started IJM. Like it's just been a lot of, it's been a busy, busy
You've
5 years.
Babies?
Baby, yeah, they were like little tiny babies at the time. And now they're going to be like first and second graders in Gainesville. So it is certainly.
Does Gainesville still only have that one mall? Oak Hill Mall or something like that?
They have like Oaks Mall and then another one. But
they've got to have two. Those players got to steal stuff from somewhere, Cameron.
No, that's Florida State.
Yeah. Yeah, you're thinking of the
wrong school.
The crab
theft and stuff is Florida State.
You can settle down. I mean, does Georgia have a law school?
I respond to my sadness with anger and inappropriate quips.
Yeah, but we're talking about Sweet Brian going to law school. You can save it.
Yeah.
You can pure unadulterated
vitriol. Did you hear him say, does Georgia even have a law school?
I don't even know. They have like.
They do. They have a very law school. My parents went there.
A very law school.
Yeah, they have the most very law school in Georgia.
Yeah, they don't practice conventional law in Georgia. They have Georgia law. It's mostly dueling and slap fighting.
Lots of chickens exchange.
If you want to go to the University of Georgia, it's a barter system.
Yeah, it's
kind of like a dowry you got to get.
You're paying moonshine.
Yeah, woo.
Eddie, I'm going to miss you being here every week, buddy.
Oh, thanks. I will actually miss it. I was like told myself I will not get emotional, but it has been I've been a little emotional thinking about it because it's like I'll still be in, I'm glad that I'm not like, moving, gone for good. Like, I'm just glad that I'll still get to have a touch point. Because the best part is, like, what's coming up later in the show, which is, like, the listener of the week and all that kind of stuff. You're like, we've had, like, great conversations with really cool people throughout the years.
Now think about it. You can save stuff up for a couple weeks.
Yeah.
And then when you come on, spotlight's on you.
Well, that's going to be
the Eddie episode.
Actually, Eddie, we're transitioning you to a listener of the week. I'm sorry to tell you. I thought they were going to tell you, but I'm going to tell you.
I would be the most uninteresting listener of the week.
Yeah, we need three interesting facts from you.
What would your three interesting facts be?
Was on a very, very popular podcast and threw it away. host another very
Can I name one, Eddie, that you owned, that you own like 10 versions of the same shirt?
I do wear the same shirt all the time.
That was a conscious decision that you made recently to get rid of all your shirts and just buy two shirts and buy nine copies of each shirt.
So I don't know that it's like a very interesting fact. I mean, you know, I'd say generally it has to do with actually love Chandler, things like that. You know, those are my facts.
I still love the fact that the first time, you know, because Eddie's done some interviews for the show over the years, and is one of his big heroes was in T. Wright. Oh. And for some reason, when they first got on the phone, Eddie introduced himself as Edward, something that no one calls him. And in Eddie's nervousness, he said, "Call me
Edward."
And
that was it. And it was just like a weird, like, I've never done that in my life.
And T. Wright says, "Call me Tom." And you say, "Call me Edward."
Yeah, I wasn't trying to be funny. I was just really nervous. Yeah, very, very nervous. But I will say, all of the goodwill of my entrance and our lovely conversation on the show ended when I hit my first snag, which was, do you remember my first big snafu?
No.
Chilean miners. That was when I realized, I see, people are listening.
Oh, yeah.
Because I made the point that made the point that was brilliant, that the Chilean miners were not heroes. They were simply guys that got stuck in their job. Right? It's almost a perfect... It's like, if you're working today, Annie, we've talked about this, and Jesse agrees 100%. If you're working today and you accidentally lock yourself in your closet and you can't get out, are you a hero? Or are you just a lady who just locked herself in her work?
Don't call me a lady for starters.
Call you a woman? Yeah, here we go, Eddie. We're not going to go down this path again.
A woman who locked myself in my office. There's nothing heroic about me keeping myself alive in a room where I go to work every day.
That was the first time I really, really messed it up. And then it was all downhill.
All right, well, moving the show along, it is time for...
Slices!
What do you have, Jesse?
Okay, I saw this headline and... So
here's
the deal. We just came out of World Cup.
A World
I
Cup?
Tried.
Yay, come on,
I couldn't get into
who
it.
Who won? Are they still playing?
No.
Can Twitter just
no, I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it.
Twitter talk about anything besides
I don't
it?
Care.
You're like, got it.
I was
France won. Did you see the France winning the World Cup? Yeah. Our old friend, podcast friend, Joy Eggerich, used the French people celebrating in the streets as a way to announce her pregnancy.
She is perfect. Yeah. She is so fun. She is. She's rocking it. Yeah. I'm so happy for her.
Watching their life in Paris is one of my, she's probably my favorite Insta story follow right now because she does such a fun job of showing her life in Paris.
Knowing her and how fun and funny she is, I bet she has given up on trying to speak French and is just living her life as a fully English speaking American and just loving it.
Probably.
Doesn't it just feel like she's just crazy enough to not worry about that?
Yeah.
Like,
She figured out how to get around the subway. She knows how to order things and she's good.
Right. She's always going
to
be
She can go to the market. She knows how to buy the cheese and she's done.
That's right.
She doesn't need anything else.
Well, all I'd say is I tried to get in the World Cup. You know, it's bad enough. It's a tournament of soccer, much less France winning. We still eat freedom fries in this house. I'll tell you that.
98 rounds to find out a country that we don't even acknowledge won. Got it.
Baguettes. I love France.
And then there was this whole royal wedding thing, you know, and it seems to have enraptured the world's attention. And I thought, you know, maybe I'm missing something. Maybe like English events are things that I need to give a chance. Obviously, the whole world loves this stuff. Maybe it's just me. Then I ran across this headline solidified my disdain. It solidified my disdain. Here's the headline. Okay. This is not The Onion. This is on Reuters, an international news service that is credible. Okay. They employ journalists around the world. This is the story. Queen Elizabeth owns how many swans? Annual count gets underway. So I'm going to read two paragraphs. Okay. It's an 800-year-old tradition of counting the swans owned by Britain's Queen Elizabeth. I'm justified in all my feelings about English stuff.
No,
okay,
you're not.
Here's the actual two paragraphs. The upping sea, it's called it's called the swan upping, which sounds like the worst 800-year-old tradition possibly imaginable. The upping sees three teams, one representing the queen, the others representing the old trade association of the Venters and the Dyers. But they patrol the River Thames in the south of England for 5 days to capture, tag, release any families of swans with young. The upping dates back to the 12th century when the English crown first claimed ownership of all mute swans, then considered them a delicacy that would be served at royal banquets. What is this? What is this? I am right about World Cup. I am right about the royal wedding. This is like a fun thing they do. This is a parody of what I think about England. Like the big national event that's making international headlines is a swan counting, accounting the queen swans.
Don't you feel like, with England, it was like England was version one and everybody figured out like, okay, well, that was a very boring version. Let's make America. Let's go ahead and sail out there. Like, there's nothing wrong with England, but it's like the first iPhone couldn't even check email. Okay. And it was like, oh, cool, I get it. Like, it's an electronic phone. And then you're like, oh, let's stop with haggis. Let's
you can
make
touch
a steak.
The screen. Yeah.
Let's not do like swan hunting anymore. Let's go ahead and have baseball, right? Like, let's do something very cool.
Haggis is not English, by the way.
Exactly. Why? Okay, I looked at the pictures.
What is it? I mean, it's all the same.
Yeah, I don't care. You know, the staple of the diet is cod and vinegar over there. Okay,
Mary Poppins,
we figured out a better thing. So, like, thank you. For
yes,
the rollout is what you're saying. Okay, I was looking. They were wearing like insane blazers neckties to go count swans as this national sporting event. Meanwhile, last night I'm watching Bryce Harper wear a Rambo bandana, knocking baseballs out of a stadium. Figured it out. Eddie, you're right. That was the beta test. Swan counting's no fun. Watching a dude with an American flag bat
Someone got paid to count swans.
Mute ones, nonetheless. That the queen would eat.
Yeah, how do they make a mute? They just take swans. Their
what
voice
is it? And it's a fun. I don't know, but this is.
They take
but
away
this
their
is
choice.
A festival that gets international attention. This is what they do for fun over there. They count mute swans. Think about that. Just think about that and then raise your American flag high. There's a lot of stuff going on in the world, you know, but you can raise your flag high tonight knowing that what we're doing for fun isn't going to count mute swans that the queen owns.
Swans are mean. Have you ever been attacked by the downtown ones?
They're super jerky.
The geese that were mean. Like,
oh, they're geese. Yeah, that's right.
Canadian swans are geese super are mean too. I think swans are mean too. I think that's a long neck water bird problem.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember being three years old, getting chased by ducks and swans and screaming for my life. I still don't like them.
Oh man. They're the worst.
Just your so childhood story.
Mute swans are a species of swan.
Yeah.
They are, the name mute derives from it being less vocal.
You are.
So not actually mute.
You are doing a better job than Chandler.
It's getting even more boring. They're not even counting like, rare mute ones. They're just the ones that aren't as loud. It gets lamer and lamer. Hey, English listeners, write me and prove that I'm wrong. That's what I'm saying. Like, I've tried. We had Lloyd on the show for years and he was yet to convince me.
Have you been there, Jesse? Have you been to England?
His fine chocolates were delicious.
Persona non grata.
Not allowed.
Persona
non grata. I'm like, I have the philosophy that Ron Swanson did when he went to London and he was doing like a historical tour. It was this. History started in the year 1776.
London's a wonderful place. We love all of our British listeners.
It is genuinely, I love it.
They had some pretty interesting feedback for the president holy smokes. They are vocal. Mm-hmm.
They don't play
that big.
They're feisty. I mean,
Jesse's next. They're going to make a balloon shaped like Jesse.
They're trapped indoors all winter. It's always drizzly. They get feisty. They get a little stir crazy.
Yeah, they eat like eggs and beans for breakfast or
curds
something.
And stuff.
Proper English.
Yeah.
Cottage cheese and stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. All right. What do you have, Annie?
It was interesting you brought up our friend Joy, our pregnant married French friend Joy, because she actually sent me this slice.
Did she?
She said, I think this.
Huh? That makes me so happy.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
Little French connection.
She sent it to me after the France won the World Cup, which was the team I picked from the start. And I'll tell you why.
Really?
Because they play like they have a group text. They play like they're all buddies and I love it. And then they won the World Cup. So this is from Joy to me, to you. There was an Australian ballet performance going on in Adelaide and it got cut short by a rat. Are you ready? They were, the whole audience and all the dancers were plunged into darkness because a rat crawled into one of the pieces of equipment and chewed a fuse and caused the entire ballet to go dark. And the dancers kept going because they didn't know what to do.
Tell me they all just fell off the front of the stage. They can't see. They're just all leaping to their death one at a time.
Slamming into each other.
You just hear
Can you imagine? What do you do?
Soft thud.
They kept going
of flesh.
And then eventually.
You just hear body after body like slamming into the band pit. Yeah.
She's in a tuba.
Help! Help me. Make him stop. Turn on the lights. Someone's
I'm badly injured here. Stop the ballet.
They just keep coming.
Twirling and jumping.
Leap.
Into the darkness.
So they were eventually stopped by management. And they got a standing ovation. This is so beautiful, this little part. They got a standing ovation from an audience. And all the audience just used their phones and turned on their flashlights and made it like this little glowing room, and everyone gave him a standing ovation. And then the last line of the article, which Joy and I really love, says, "The rat, it is presumed, did not make it."
Yeah, because he ate through a 220 wire and is just completely scorched.
The first four years of Relevant's existence, 2000 to 2004, squatted in a free suite in the back of my parents' office building in Lake Mary, Florida.
Yeah.
And regularly, I'd say twice a year,
yeah, they have a squirrel problem.
The internet would go down or all the power to the building would go down.
Yeah.
Because, you know, those power lines that kind of go to a building, then there's like a transformer and then the line goes into the building.
Yeah.
Squirrels would go onto that and get electrocuted and take the transformer down and all the power to the building would go out.
Oh, yeah.
Because they had all these like dying squirrels.
You could see the squirrel.
Bright squirrels. Yeah. It happened at my house too. And growing up, this is such a Georgia story.
No kidding. Go Gators.
I was going to say, you know, when there's a new governor's race in Georgia, one of the top issues they talk about is the squirrel infestation problem, the state squirrel problem. They have whole debates about it.
Yeah, whenever people get fired from their job, we call it like running the squirrel up the pole. That's what happened. It just fried everything. That's what happened. So it used to happen all the time at my house. I'm so embarrassed to tell the story, but we had a electric pole and squirrels kept getting fried on the electric pole and it would take out the power across my parents' house and my grandparents' house because we all lived on one piece of land.
Maybe we can clip that off for the next time you and I have a Florida-Georgia back and forth. Because
I drive through the state of Georgia, I see on the side of the road, soft-boiled peanuts and fried squirrel skin.
And that smell.
Oh, yeah.
Man, do you love boiled peanuts, though?
No, it's disgusting.
Cameron, boiled peanuts
are the disgusting.
Best.
Disgusting.
You smell it, and you're like, this is going to be so good. And then you're like, I see, a warm, watery peanut.
Yeah, this is disgusting.
It is so good.
A wet peanut.
Perfect.
Yeah. You know what's slightly less satisfying than a peanut? A wet one.
Throughout the summer, when I leave church, they have like little treats. They do little ice creams or whatever. And 2 weeks ago, they had a sweet tea and soft boiled peanuts. As people can grab a little soft boiled peanut on the way to the car.
Yeah.
And my son, Cohen, was like, oh, I want to try that.
Oh, boy. You guys, by the way, haven't gotten your 23andMe back yet. So there's a lot of question marks still.
No, so he wanted to try it. And I hate soft boiled peanuts. I was like, sure, there you go, try it. And he also finds them quite disgusting.
Yeah. It's why would they take a
peanut? They just taste like warm water, like hot dog water vomit things. They're nasty.
Peanuts. No, peanuts at a baseball
game. You are not doing right by boiled peanuts. They are so much better than that. They're salty, and they're because you probably ate them wrong.
What
Cameron
do you do?
Is what
well,
y'all
you,
did. Did you open it with your hands and just
get all the juice out?
Yeah. You're doing it super wrong. You put the whole thing in your mouth.
Hey, you find your miss where one of your teeth was, and you stick the peanut right there and just start sucking on it.
You suck on
it. You slide it right into your tooth hole.
Suck on the rest of the day like a straw.
Kick my goat.
Yeah.
Goodness gracious.
I grew up with goats, Eddie. Did you know that?
I picture that that's the part of the country where getting dressed up is a novelty T-shirt that you tuck. Like, that's getting fancy. That's getting fancy.
Listen, here's the thing about Bull Peanuts. I want everybody to try them. And here's the trick. You need to look at what they're cooking them in, because the dirtier and older the container looks, the pot looks, the better the Bull Peanuts are going to be.
You eat the shell? That's...
You don't eat it, but you put it in your mouth and you suck it, and then you open and get all the salt water out, and then you open it in your mouth and you eat the peanuts.
Are
and
you
then you
sick
spit
afterwards?
Out the shell.
It's a lot of juice. That's a lot of like.
I mean, you get sick after eating anything if you eat too much.
Well, you get sick after eating anything, that's definitely dysentery.
Worst rationale. I mean, I can't. That is, you get.
No, no, no. If you walk into a gas station and it's in a crock pot, they're not going to be very good. But if they've got one of those big old black pots that are sitting outside on like wood, eat it.
Yeah. Can I just say this, Annie? I've learned this lesson the hard way. Don't eat anything out of a gas station crock pot. It's just a rule. It's a lesson you only learn once in life.
And you just steer clear. People are going
to
come to my defense on this. I feel good about it. I feel good that the internet is going to rally
about
with
boiled
me.
Peanuts?
That Bull Peanuts from a nasty pot are the best ones.
I don't go to gas stations that have homemade goods with like hand-drawn price tags on things. I've just made that a rule too. I don't feel like that's a reputable place.
Florida into Georgia, all of them have like their truck stop ones are big. They all have gift shops like little alligator heads. They got the soft boiled peanuts.
Yeah. I drove all of Georgia yesterday, and that's all it is over and over again. Yep. We drove from Kentucky to Orlando yesterday, and it's just nothing but bull peanuts.
Yeah, I need you to stop calling them soft boiled peanuts because they're just
That also isn't a word. So if we're going to talk about my words, B O O U L E D also isn't a word. Bull.
Boiled is not correct.
I got to turn my phone back on. A squirrel jumped on it. Let me get started. So listen. I've had this like weird fear my whole life. And here, it comes from a very specific memory. And I know it sounds like I'm teeing up for a joke, but I'm not. It's been a thing that's always bothered me. When I got super into Nirvana, and Nirvana was like my first band that it was like...
I thought that was Dave Matthews.
No, Dave was after. Oh, okay. Nirvana was the first... Kind of that Nirvana Pearl Jam, that whole moment was like, oh, I see. I'm listening to my own music. My dad and I used to listen to a lot of music together. Like, so it was all like Beatles, Simon and Garfunkel, which I still...
Do you mean your dad or do you mean Mr. Rogers?
That's a great point. I do mean Mr. Rogers. I do mean Fred Rogers.
He would watch Mr. Rogers and just put on some Simon Garfunkel in the background.
You're like, oh, thanks, Dad.
And boring Presbyterian recreational.
And my dad listened to Nirvana and was like, how could anyone like this? And I remember thinking, how could you not like it? It's just good music. And it turns out, like, and so I always had this thing where I thought, I don't want to get stuck in my music, because I realized my dad only listened to like, he had just this CD collection. That's all he listened to. Never any new music. And I was always really like, I want to keep listening to new music.
A lot of people are like that though, and they don't realize it happens to them.
Right. But there is a study out that actually is talking about the fact that when you hit about 30, the whole machine stops unless you work really hard. And the study talks about, and they did a really full study. The results weren't surprising, but basically when you're hitting around 30-ish, you start to, because of your season of life, because of career, family, just the fact that you're getting older, you're not a kid anymore, you start to get very nostalgic for that time. And so around 30, you really start leaning into the nostalgia.
Is that when the haircut stays the same too?
Well, but that's the thing. They're talking about like generally you are in sort of a suspended time of whatever happened between about 17 and 25. And so in a recent view of... They analyzed Spotify statistics, and they said that of all listeners of Spotify, the song Creep by Radiohead isn't even charted a song. It's just like an old song, and it's not like in the top. Amongst guys that are 38 years old, which is my age, it's like in the top 100 songs always, because it's just that song hit hard when we were in sort of our formative years. And so the study says, basically concludes with this idea, like, is that okay? And they're like, no, it's a wonderful way that, you know, the study concludes with saying there is no real cognitive problem with it. It's a really healthy way to relive your past in a way that's not like, you know, doing anything weird and Like you're just, it's a, but it's also in order to break that, it's got to be a real conscious decision to move forward, which is why I've been really grateful for Relevant, because when all else fails and I listen back to the show, I'm like, oh, that was a good song. You know, that was an interesting, the opening song has launched me into more bands than many other, you know, mediums. But like, you know, sometimes you guys will do like the wrap up of like the best 10 albums of the year.
Yeah.
And that's when I'm like, okay,
here we go.
Download all those, make sure you're only listening to that for the next couple of months. But I thought it was really interesting. And I was wondering if you all continue to, because we're all past at least 30. If you all continue to listen to and pursue new music hard, or if you're just...
I think Jesse and I are unique in the fact that professionally we have to.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, like I'm passionate about new music. Yeah. I always care about what's next, what's emerging, what's buzzing.
Yeah.
With Relevant, like we're not interested in mass popularity. We're interested in what's emerging, you know? So we're always trying to look down the road and around the corner. But I'm wired that way. I get bored easily and want new. I can't imagine. I mean, the people that like just pop, just like they hit a point, they popped it neutral, they dress the same hairstyle, same music forever. Like I have renovations going on in my house right now.
Yeah.
Contractors listen to stuff from the 80s and that's right. it. That's all they listen to. And I'm going, there are other stations, you know.
Right. Yeah. I like to listen to or find new stuff, but there's definitely the classics of the things that I found, kind of like the first like cool bands that I liked when I was in my early adulthood life, like Grizzly Bear or something like that. Where I listen to that, I'm like,
ooh, good one.
I'm like, oh, this is
the National.
Yeah, I throw the National into the Office playlist for
but
jazz.
But mixed in with, you know, the newer things.
All the early 2000s shoegazing.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder, Eddie, if it's 17 to 24 or if when you make a, because 17 to whatever window that is when you make such a big life shift. I wonder if there's music attached to life shift.
They say it's fully connected to positive memories. Yeah. Like it is, has nothing to do with the fact that you're 20. It has to do with the fact that you're in a great year of college and, you know, you like met some friends and went on a road trip. And they said, you know, it releases like everything else. There is a dopamine attachment to when the bridge of a song hits. They like watched people's brains. And when it was like a song they knew, dopamine would start to flow before like the moment of the song in anticipation. And so it really is just like how a drug works, just like how chocolate works. It really releases a chemical in your head that makes you feel that. But they said you got to work really hard to continue to have new music.
Do they feel that way they go get the same haircut?
That's okay. It wasn't in the study, but I would imagine, which is why, joking aside, I like almost never turn on, like I won't turn on Dave Matthews a lot. We joke about it, but I'm like, I could get...
Be that guy?
Because you don't want to...
You don't want to be seen the same.
I just don't want to listen. I could get stuck in a loop of listening, because I've always listened to a lot of music. I just don't want to get stuck in a loop of listening to those same 20 albums over and then never hear, which is why also Apple Music has been awesome, because I can just tell it to play me new things and it will just do that.
Yeah, I mean, and their Apple Music's live show, Beats One's live show, like around dinner time, is like charting now and new stuff, and it's a great discovery pipeline.
But I like push hard. I'm like, all right. Interesting. I'm listening.
Is there like, why push hard? I mean, like, why is there like a fear? What? Like, were you surrounded by adults that were lame or like?
Well, yeah, I'm kind of back to that opening story. Like, I was like, I don't want to, like Nirvana was objectively really good music.
Yeah.
But if I feel like if you don't work on expanding that muscle, you're going to not think, oh, this
so
is
you,
just...
So your dad's reaction was like, you made a conscious decision. I don't ever want to be like that.
Right. And it's like, I want to be able to still, I mean, there's still music that I just won't like. There's albums that I've heard recently. I'm like, I just do not, that is not hitting with me like it is everyone else.
Sure.
But like the new Drake album, I know everybody loves it, but it just doesn't...
It's background music.
Yeah. It just doesn't get me like it does everyone else.
I think it's interesting that if you look at the iTunes charts right now, literally of the top 20 songs, 18 of them are Drake's songs from that album.
Yeah, it's just a taste thing, though. Yeah. If you're not into like trap or something like that, you're not going to like the Drake album. Like,
yeah, but, you know what I mean? I still keep pushing trap. So, anyhow.
All right, that'll do it for Slices. Yeah. Stay tuned. Up next, Bo Burnham joins us. You're listening to Neon Feather. The song is Between You and Me, featuring Chris Kahn. And at the beginning of the podcast, you heard Drake with In My Feelings, the clean version. Well, this week's show is brought to you by Samaritan Ministries. Samaritan Ministries is a healthcare sharing ministry with over 250,000 Christians that care for one another's needs, from broken bones to cancer, pregnancies to organ transplants, all without the use of insurance. In fact, when Samaritan Ministries members Eric and Kelly joined just before having their second baby, at first they were skeptical that their needs would even be met. The hospital bills totaled nearly $20,000. But when Eric and Kelly began receiving checks and notes from other members congratulating and praying for them, they said a sense of peace they didn't have with their first pregnancy came over them. Almost every trip to the mailbox had a new stack of letters from Christians they had never met, but who had come around their family in their time of joy and need to care for them financially, emotionally, and spiritually. Each month, Samaritan Ministries' growing biblical community shares $27 million in medical needs person to person. Yet the monthly share has never exceeded $495 for a family of any size and is even less for two-person and single-person households. To learn more about how you can be a part of this community of Christians helping each other with healthcare, visit SamaritanMinistries.org. Annie, you're a member, aren't you?
I am. I love it. It's great. I like that every month I know exactly who my money is going to and what their need is. I do think that's pretty cool.
And just to show how confident you are in it, you are a person who regularly eats boiled peanuts out of a very dirty crock pot in a gas station.
Exactly. I am that sure that Samaritan Ministries friends will gather around me in my time of need.
She's doing all kinds of stuff to push the limits of what...
That's right. I'm riskier than I've ever been because I'm that sure of Samaritan Ministries.
Well, Bo Burnham is a popular author, filmmaker, musician, and stand-up comedian. His latest film is called Eighth Grade, and it's about the anxieties of growing up in the era of social media. It's already being hailed as one of the best movies of the year. It currently holds a 99% on Rotten Tomatoes. The movie rolls out wide release this weekend. We recently talked to Bo about the movie and the real-world issues that inspired it. Here is Bo Burnham.
You said before that this movie is in some ways about the internet, and I feel like a lot of things about the internet can be kind of cynical and dark, but this movie isn't really like that. It's kind of a slice of life just about this eighth grader.
Yeah, that was the hope, to just be descriptive, you know. When I feel like I see movies that talk about the internet and want to be like prescriptive or whatever, it's like, the more you know about the internet, the more time you spend on the internet, the more confused you are by it. And right. my hope of the movie is definitely not to put judgment on it. It's not like she throws her phone into the ocean and then she's happy. You know, it's like, I just wanted to sort of take inventory of the way it felt. And then, you know, the audience watching it can then discuss it or think about it after the fact. But yeah, I really wanted no judgment because, yeah, the internet is everything to me. The internet is good and bad and weird and strange. Makes us, connects us, isolates us, stimulates us, numbs us, you know, all those things. So I wanted the movie to hopefully contain those things and not just be a TED Talk or something.
Right. Or an episode of Black Mirror.
Exactly. Where it's like, I love Black Mirror, but it's like, there's got to be another a way to talk about the internet that isn't just dystopian satire, you know, something a little more... unresolved, a human or something. Well, again, I really like Black Mirror, and I actually find Black Mirror very emotional and human, but
totally.
I didn't want to be satirical or ironic or any of that.
Yeah, when you say the internet is confusing, could you explain what you mean by that?
Well, I just mean it's very hard to talk about with any sort of authority, because the more you know about it, the less you're able to articulate about it, and it's just changing so rapidly, and it's so powerful, and it's so wide and deep that it's, again, I just sort of feel like I'm in a position where all I kind of want to do is gather inventory of how it feels, and then maybe, you know, in 20 years we'll be able to look back and have a better stand. But I can't get out of the forest. I can't get out of the trees to see the forest, you know? So
right.
I had no interest in making a movie that was a big overarching statement, but I wanted to make a sort of granular, emotional. The only thing I'm certain about with the internet is how I feel moment to moment, which is confused. So I'm only certain about my confusion, and that's sort of what I hope the movie does in a way.
Yeah. So let me piggyback off of your force for the trees. Why then this particular tree? Because I feel like people would especially hear your name and see your name attached to it and think, oh, well, it would make sense to, you know, frame this through someone in their 20s or someone older. Like, why a story about eighth grade?
I think the internet kind of makes eighth graders of us all, kind of, and we all kind of act 13 on the internet, and by actually following a 13-year-old, you can just kind of engage with it a little more honestly. I don't know, at that age, you're just so open and vulnerable, and the things really, feelings register as more intense. Everything's just more extreme, and I wanted a movie that felt intense and visceral and sort of incredibly, like, intense moments out of very small things that aren't really that consequential. And that's sort of the story of 13, being 13, you know. Oh, yeah. An average day is life and death for them. So I wanted to take sort of banal, regular experience and show how much, how intense they can be. Because that's the story of really anxiety, you know. Anxiety sort of overlays onto really mundane stuff and makes it almost unbearable.
Right. And I think there's something kind of, I don't know, like sneakily important there too about showing this through someone who doesn't know the world without the internet. You know, I think there's still like...
Yeah, exactly. It isn't, to her, it's not this other thing that came into her life to be processed. It integrates itself. So you don't need to state it. You know, it's just a part of her. Exactly. It didn't need to be treated as this outside force. It was just a part of her life.
Yeah, and you know what it does too? It kind of sheds an idealism. Like, I was barely born outside of the internet and remember like a small slice of my childhood that existed without it.
We must be around the same age, probably.
Yeah, I'm 24.
I think the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, I just remember like my parents pushing me to like play outside, and so I still kind of have that like weird thing in the back of my head where I'm scrolling through Twitter at the end of the day and being like, but there's something else that is quote unquote like the right decision, and this isn't that, you know. And I think it's cool that like it's or important in a way to, that this movie kind of exists outside of that mindset almost.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, this movie's not her parent, you know what I mean?
Yes, yeah.
Like, her parent is in this movie, but the movie is, I mean, I don't see myself as, like, a person that's better than eighth graders and has more a sense of the world than eighth graders. For me, it was trying to explore my feeling, my unresolved feelings. So it isn't like, this movie's not going to tell you what to do or tell kids what to do or tell you as adults how to feel. It's just going to say, like, this is what it is. And then, you know, it was my job to just try to be as honest as possible and authentic as possible.
Yeah. Did you find yourself kind of having to like check your feelings about it at the door? Like, is there a version of this movie that is like really kind of delivering a message about the internet, or was there at one point?
No, I don't, not checking. No, I didn't check my feelings. My feelings are just that. My feelings are conflicted, and no, I just, my feelings aren't clear. So, but again, it was trying to explore feeling, not explore personal feeling, not explore outside feeling. This wasn't my feelings about a generation or my feelings about all of technology. It was my personal feelings about my relationship to myself in every moment through this kid. And so that was the point, just to keep it personal, not to make it feel like it's doing some overarching big cultural social statements.
Got it. That makes sense. So, but what doesn't make sense is, I think then, if it's so personal, what made it right to do that through an eighth grader? Why was that such a natural thing to communicate all these personal ideas through an experience that is really other and different from your own, at least from like a demographic level? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I found that I've connected most personally with movies that I don't align with demographically. It's not very exciting for me to see myself in a 27-year-old guy. But also, yeah, I mean, that's the sort of beauty of art to me, is to be able to see that there are common experiences and feelings in other people that don't demographically align with you, and that deeper ideas and feelings are things we all share. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I tried writing the 27-year-old guy version of certain stories. I was just so bored with it, like so bored. So, yeah.
Was it just boring because you wanted the difference?
Who cares? I mean, I didn't care about him. I like didn't care about him or what his feelings like. I don't know. It wasn't exciting. When it was a kid, it was like exciting and visceral and meaningful. And when it was like a 27-year-old, it just felt like a bummer. And the guy was, I don't know. It just didn't make sense. It's really my first answer to it of you know, the eighth, like the anxiety makes me feel like a 13-year-old. It's a truer version of myself than myself. It's a better version of it. You know, the internet makes us look like 13-year-olds. I just think I wanted to talk about the current moment and what it felt like, and she was the best way to talk about it. Better and the freshest way. I feel like I'd seen this sort of, you know, I wasn't going to want to do like some, yeah, depressed or anxious 27-year-old guy living with his parents. And I mean, it was just like, there was nothing exciting about that for me.
Yeah. Okay. I gotcha. Something that kind of occurred to me as I was preparing for this and preparing to talk to you is, I mean, your career has been adjacent and involved with the internet from pretty much like now all the way back from the very beginning. And I'm wondering if you have always kind of felt this way, or you have seen your relationship to the internet and your feelings about it change over that time.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely change. I mean, you know, yeah, I mean, I'm not as a 27-year-old feeling the same way I felt when I was 16. And you know, some of that's probably because of the way the internet changed, but most of it's probably the way I just changed personally as a person. But yeah, it's definitely evolved.
How has it changed, do you think? Like, did these sort of similar, I mean, this is kind of a weird term when it hits my brain, but like, I guess performance anxiety in relation to the internet, was that occurring to you when you were a teenager, or is that something that's
I don't think the internet asked as deep questions of us when I was that age, you know.
Okay.
It was like, make a MySpace, make a Facebook page, make a funny little website, or post a funny little video about yourself. And now it's Twitter and Instagram, which are literally, what do you look like? What do you think? What do you look like? What do you think? Like, base questions that are very deep and weird and strange. So I think the internet's gotten more personal. I think the internet's gotten deeper and more like primal in what it asks of people emotionally. So I think that's definitely changed. It used to be like a fun little talent show / bulletin board, and now it's like some weird emotional matrix or something. So yeah, I think it's gotten weirder and deeper.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's where we've, you know, seen the good and bad, is that, you know, like, social media can raise tons of money for, you know, like, to fight injustice, but also be super toxic and, you know, hellish.
Right. It gives voice and visibility to people that didn't have it before, and it also, it's also set the culture on fire, you know? It's like the printing press, you know what I mean? You can make The Great Gatsby or Mein Kampf. Like, truly, you know, it's like, it's just a chaotic, neutral sort of thing that can be used for whatever, but it's just powerful. That's all it is. It's powerful, and it can be powerfully sad, powerfully good, any of that.
Bo, really appreciate it.
Appreciate it, Tyler. Thank you. Thanks for the time.
Yeah, you bet. Congrats on a great movie.
Appreciate it. Thanks, man. Talk soon. Thank you.
That was Bo Burnham. Up next, stay tuned. It's our Listener of the Week. Listening to No Rome. The song is 17. Okay, it is time for...
You listen to the show, and it's time to get to know you. It's the Listener of the Week.
All right, this week's Listener of the Week is Daily Nettles Jones. Welcome to the show, Daily.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Daily.
Where are you calling us from?
I am at work in Denver, Colorado.
Ooh, what do you do in Denver? This is Eddie. It's nice to meet you.
Hey, Eddie.
Denver. Hold on. Before you ask that, Daily, I have to say, you sent us three facts. We can talk about two of them. But the employment one, I am fascinated by. And I feel like this could be a whole segment. Reveal interesting fact number one, and tell Eddie what you do for a living there in Denver.
I am a I am a brain surgeon for mice.
She's a neurosurgeon for only for mice.
Mice? Yeah, it's like,
yes.
Yeah,
for
mice. Are useful. Yes, rodents.
Why?
So I am in research in neuroscience. So I get to be a surgeon without going to medical school, basically.
What about rats that chew through wires?
You're being humble.
We see
daily,
it written here.
You're being humble.
I will read it.
You're being Haley. Yeah. Okay. You're not just a neurosurgeon for mice. Eddie, this is what she's doing. She's researching mind reading with computer interfaces. Okay.
Are you even real? Are you a computer?
I'm not a computer. I'm actually super bad at computer coding, which is a lot of what it takes to make brain computer interfaces work. So I kind of do the hands-on side and the surgical side of things. And I kind of let other people do the computer side. It's legit. It's a real thing.
He's for sure a computer.
I have an unbelievable amount of questions.
Okay, Animaniacs.
I have so many questions. Yes, I have so many
questions. That's her office.
How do they train you? Do they just give you a dozen mice and they're like, you'll get it by 12? I mean, how do you...
Yeah, basically.
You just keep popping open mice?
there's actually a lot of training. So,
That's good.
I want to say we treat mice super well. Like, there is so much red tape to research. So they're kind of living their best life in a lot of ways. They have a lot of food all the time. We specifically train them on motor tasks. So, we're giving them a lot of treats and stuff. And so you just got to make sure that, they don't start to feel like your pets, because sometimes it's like, wow, this is really adorable, but I can't take them home. Yeah.
Okay, Daly, I have a question for you. How deep is this? I didn't even know this field of research existed. If you were to tell me right now that there's a lab in Denver where neurosurgeons are attaching mice brains to computers, I would say that's like an awesome episode of Black Mirror.
Oh,
how
deep
are we? What can these mice brains do? What do we know?
Yeah, so basically there's two sides to this. One is we want to understand how to use brain computer interfaces to help people. So specifically something you might have heard of is folks with Parkinson's disease sometimes are able to receive a deep brain stimulation, and it's basically like a pacemaker for your brain. So sometimes it will help people who have tremors. That's kind of one side of the research.
Let me ask you this, Daly. Those are all very admirable, I think incredibly important uses of this technology. From what you've observed with these mice, how long are we away from me sitting on the couch and turning on the TV
and changing channels with my mind power? When we're also sitting on the couch, can I have like a remote controlled mouse? I'm not sure which way your technology is going.
I really want to know, when am I going to get a mouse that I control with my mind, right? Or when can I control the TV
with
my mind?
So I would estimate the TV controlling as maybe a couple years out.
Whoa.
Probably.
Couple years? I thought you'd say never.
A couple years.
Yeah, cool.
A couple years? Or are you for real? So you were not that long away
probably.
Where I'm thinking about a show and I can turn it on.
But that's really cool.
It's
Is that cool?
Still very complicated. And right now we're trying to start at the basics. Like we want to let people control like prosthetic limbs with
cool.
just thinking about it. So that's kind of another direct application.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Then you being able to control your television with your mind, Jesse. That's probably true.
Well, okay, two other facts. She, in high school, Daly once sewed a life-size sock monkey costume for a Halloween party at a local venue. Like, think of the Kia commercial from 2010. The only problem was she forgot to add any holes to see or breathe out of the giant sock monkey head that weighed 20 pounds. What happened?
Yeah, so I just had to go for it because I knew I was just going to have the best time of my life. I had always wanted to be like a high school mascot, but I knew I didn't have the dancing skills to try out for that. So I was like, okay, this is my one chance. I'm going to go be the sock monkey. And basically, I had to have friends hold my hand. And it was kind of adorable because I had, these like white sock mittens on my hand, and they're just like, oh, it's just the big sock monkey. But it was kind of hard to breathe. So I ended up having to just like dance and try not to, I don't know, bump into people too much. And could not see a thing.
I would love it if she shows up to a Halloween party as a mouse and everybody's like, ah.
but it's a mouse with like the brain split.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, good one. She's a mouse. Oh, I see.
Right.
So, Daly, your parents, your third fact is, it sounds like basically the plot of what see as like a funny Will Ferrell, Amy Poehler comedy. Are you guys picturing this too? They're technically empty nesters now, but her mom has turned their home into a concert venue called Sunstroke House Music.
That does sound awesome.
Your parents sound awesome, Daly. Tell us about their, what is your old bedroom like a DJ booth now?
Basically, yeah. So anytime I want to come home, I'm like, hey, mom, I'm just, you know, I'm planning to come home this weekend, just making sure there's not, you know, like a bass player that's also going to be staying in my room.
But listen, this is how she describes it. It includes lights, AV equipment, full course dinners before the shows. The musicians stay in guest rooms like an Airbnb. And she, her mom even had her favorite podcast, TBTL, host a live show from their living room. And then she says, even though it's a small Mississippi town, most musicians are indie artists and they usually only book those with less than 50,000 Spotify listeners. Isn't that cool?
Wow.
Yeah. She's a patron of the arts. I love
That's actually that super cool.
Yeah, that's super cool.
But it's incredible.
Mice. But the mice.
Still, I can't.
So is it going to be like a mice army that we can raise up and control? Is it?
Probably not.
Okay. That's good.
I am rarely speechless.
I know.
It is hard.
I know.
I have so much going through my head right now. Like I said, I didn't know this research was even happening, much less you're telling me we're a couple years away
from mind-controlling things. Cameron, you really judge Jesse for wanting that when I actually think that would be a dream for you.
Yeah, it just exists.
I don't know. It's not morality. I think what they're doing, you know, like being able to control prosthetics and things like that is amazing.
Yeah.
But in the wrong hands, mind reading, she literally describes as basically researching mind reading with brain-computer interfaces. I just feel like there's a lot of moral grayness that the wrong motives could exploit, maybe, you know?
Oh, sure, sure. I was just going to say the nice thing about this, to make you guys feel a little bit more at ease, is this type of research is very invasive to get really any information out of the brain. So I couldn't just like bring a device and like read your mind from across the room. So like, just make sure no one's like sneaking anything into your head while you're asleep. You'll be fine.
Nobody was thinking about that, Daly.
Yeah.
All right. Listen.
The fact that you're saying it, Daly, makes me think you have that device with you right now. No, Daly, I'll say this. I don't know if you guys are at the stage for human testing or looking for volunteers. My mind is yours. The fact that you can already do this with mice, I feel like
Daly,
I can trust
before we end this call and then talk about you for 45 minutes. I just want to pick your brain on something
literally.
Sure. Thank you. How long have you been listening to the show?
I think since about 2015. I remember the first episode I listened to was in an interview with Mute Math, because they're my all-time favorite band. So I listened to that and I was like, all right, I'm hooked. You guys are my friends now. So glad we got to meet finally.
That's incredible. That's awesome. Well, thank you for listening to the podcast. That's all I wanted to say. You thought it was a joke. I just thought it was really sweet of her.
It's like, I thought you were teeing up something.
We always hang up on these and I forget to say, thank you for being a listener of the week.
Yes,
thank you for doing that and being awesome.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, you are a delightful human being. You are also a monster. And I don't know how to reconcile my feelings about you.
We are afraid of you.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us, Daly. That's Daly Nettles-Jones, our listener of the week. Bye.
Daly,
thank you guys.
You can think hang up now. It'll work.
Bye, Daly.
Wow. Set a high bar for future listener of the week.
So. I'm kind of okay with X-Men. Yeah. I feel like that was the weirdest thing I've heard.
A little Black Mirror action happened.
I'm going to go away from
I love it. I'm going to be preoccupied the whole day thinking about this. I'm going to go down like a deep rabbit hole tonight learning about all these.
That's all it took for you to do a weird rabbit hole all night.
I am really
surgery on mice? I just don't. That's awesome. So tiny.
That's,
awesome.
That's yeah. so tiny.
That's just so tiny.
Little tiny. Does she use yeah. lasers? Does she use?
I do like that she said it's very intrusive. I was like.
Yeah.
Yeah, we know.
Because it is brain surgery.
Oh my goodness.
It is a brain.
Wow. It's like that game operation.
I'm telling you, I don't want her to know my address.
Little tiny tweezers trying to get that little tiny funny bone out of the operation guy.
Yeah, that's what I was picturing the whole time, Cameron, is like a mouse-sized operation guy.
I pictured she's sitting there talking to us and there's just like three little mice on her desk just like looking at her waiting and they're just like got no little heads.
Like you know how she dialed the Skype number? She just had the mouse do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She asked the mice, the mouse.
All relevant. And the mice just looks at the computer.
When we use our computers, we use a mouse.
Oh.
So does she.
Now that is a regret.
We've been using mice on computers for years.
We didn't know what Steve Jobs was trying to do.
It is a real regret that we did not come up with that while she was on the phone. Because that is as...
Right. What if actually all she does is change the batteries?
I control my computer with a mouse too. I don't care.
That is a really great joke.
Yeah, what if like what Annie just said, she's just changing batteries on like...
She just changes batteries at like a Dell Super Center and tells us that she's doing brain surgery on mice.
Congratulations, madam. You got on the show.
Everyone always spins their facts anyway. So she spun it right into our web.
But here's the thing. Like I don't doubt she seems like an honest person. But if someone was like, yeah, I work for the time travel lab at the NASA offices in Arlington. I'd be like, oh, cool, man.
We don't know if you're lying. Right. So
yeah.
This is like a live now. Listener of the week is becoming like a lie detector test on our ability to check whether people tell us the truth.
Yeah, that's true. All right. Well, there you go.
Well, we just wrecked
it. If you want to be a future listener of the week, send three true facts about yourself to us.
True. Just tell
via
us
Twitter
the truth.
At Relevant Podcast, and we will pick one for next week's show. Hey, and thanks for listening, everyone. Hey, on that note, we'll wrap things up. Many thanks to Samaritan Ministries for making the episode possible. To learn more about how you can be a part of this community of Christians helping each other with healthcare, visit SamaritanMinistries.org. Also, thanks to Bo Burnham for joining us. His new film, Eighth Grade, is opening wide today. You can follow him on Twitter, at Bo Burnham.
I'm sorry, I think you got his Twitter handle wrong. I think it's Bob Earnham.
Oh, my God.
It's all one word, so I don't know, Cameron, to be fair.
Oh, he was up at 4 a.m. scrawling on a piece Twitter of handle, Bob Earnham. Don't forget.
I mean, the pause.
We don't know.
We all thought
he was there.
We don't know what the Twitter handle is. We know it's spelled.
It's Bob.
But I don't know, Cameron.
That was
an
edit point.
It's not.
That was.
Totally. We all did. That was
Jesse.
Brilliant.
Bob Earnham.
Follow him at Bob Earnham, it says here. Bo Burnham. I don't know why I picked that. At Bob.
Do you have
Burnham.
A one when you have Twitter. To like use an email address to like log into something or sign, whatever, and you know it's going to spam you. Do you use a fake one or real?
Fake?
Fake. What's yours? What's your go-to?
Oh, I don't actually have. I just, it's like usually random. I don't have like a go-to. You
he
have
doesn't
one?
Want to tell you. He just doesn't want to tell
Bob
you.
Bob at Bob.com.
Jasper Bob Cunningham
works every time. And if whoever owns Bob.com, I really apologize, buddy.
Yeah, and it's
all my spam is going to you
because it's Bob.
Yeah,
and he is not appreciated.
Bob Earnham at Bob at Bob.com. Yeah. There you go.
Bo Burnham, you follow me?
That was quite a show, Jess.
All right. Hey, the new issue of Relevant featuring Leon Bridges on the cover is out now. Go check it out at relevantmagazine.com. It's available at newsstands nationwide as well. And you can subscribe now at relevantmagazine.com. There's a good deal going on.
I saw one out in Kentucky. I was going to take a picture and forgot, but I was in a bookstore.
Out in the wild.
I always feel very proud of you guys.
Oh,
I have nothing to do with it, so I'm so proud. Good job, dudes.
Hey.
Hey.
For a few weeks. I mean, again, it's not goodbye. Yes, it's not, see you soon.
That's right. Yeah, I'll see you in a bit. Yeah,
well, on that note, we'll wrap things up.
Are we? I'm assuming we're ending on the Boys to Men. It's so
cats.
Hard to say goodbye to yesterday. Cute up.
It's whatever you want.
Hey, it's whatever you want, Eddie.
Yeah, Eddie, for the first time ever, you get to pick the outro song. Mm. What's your choice?
I choose.
If it's Dave Matthews Band, you're never welcome.
I choose the final stanza of Mr. Mistopheles from Cats. Play it on Relevant. I don't care about this.
I'm Cameron Strang.
I was Eddie Koffeltz.
I'm Chandler Strang.
I'm Jesse Carey.
I'm Annie F. Downs.
We'll see you on Wednesday.
Thank you for listening to the Relevant Podcast. If you like what you heard, be sure to leave us a review on iTunes. Check out other shows from the Relevant Podcast Network in the podcast section at relevantmagazine.com. And while you're there, browse exclusive podcast merchandise at our online store. Make sure to subscribe to Relevant Magazine. Info is available at relevantmagazine.com/subscribe.
I'm badly injured here. Stop the ballet! Ah!
Relevant Podcast Network.